Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by James Hitchin. James is an eating disorder and addiction therapist and the founder of the Wellbeing and Recovery Collective. Following his lived experience of an eating disorder and addiction, James started the Wellbeing and Recovery Collective to support others and make recovery accessible to all. In this week's episode, which is a special episode for Men's Mental Health Week, we speak all about James's experience of having an eating disorder and going through addiction recovery, and how this has shaped his desire to build the Wellbeing and Recovery Collective to support others. We speak about the pressures that are on men and the stigma that still exists, and openly discuss James's experience in order to share this and to support other men in speaking about their experiences too, to get support. Well, it's so nice to have you on the podcast, James. How are you doing today?
I am pretty good, thank you. You know, sort of, there's a bit of sun outside. Life seems calm at this minute, so I'll take it.
Very nice. I was going to say, your video is very bright. I was going to say, do you have a lot of sun where you are?
Well, sun / artificial lighting.
Nice, nice. That is great. I need to get myself one of them. Although one of my friends was showing me her sad lamp the other day. And honestly, it didn't make me feel better. It was just really irritating me with its presence.
I don't think they're for everyone.
No.
Depends who you ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, did you want to introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yes. Thanks, Hannah. My name is James Hitchin, and I am the clinical director and founder of the Wellbeing and Recovery Collective. I'm an eating disorder practitioner, qualified therapist, and also support people with addictions.
Amazing. Thank you very much. And you're joining me today because it's currently Men's Health Month, but when this podcast gets released, it will be Men's Mental Health Week. And I thought it'd be great to have you on to talk about the topic, being a man yourself. And I wondered if, to start with, if you would be happy to share your mental health experience and maybe thinking a bit about your own eating disorder experience.
Sure. I mean, I guess my own experience is why I do what I do. You know, I spent 17, 18 years in the sort of events and hospitality industry before I hit a very big wall and needed to make some changes in my life. And as part of that journey, I retrained to be a therapist. I took a particular interest in eating disorders and addictions because of my own lived experience, really. And I'd suffered with some mental health challenges for a long time, anxiety, depression, and that kind of stuff, but had some very, very questionable coping mechanisms. And I suppose in terms of my history with sort of eating disordered or disordered eating behaviors, that didn't become apparent until I was getting help for other issues. I guess then sort of unpicking things, you know, I'd had an unhelpful relationship with food for a really, really long time, and it manifested in many different ways, but I would never have thought of it in sort of the terms of an eating disorder. Maybe that's because I was a man, maybe that's because I was sort of and the way it manifested, I was at an all-boys school throughout all my schooling. You know, it was just a lot of messaging. I mean, I didn't really know what an eating disorder was, you know, until I got, and there was that stereotypical, it's sort of young white women, which is just not the case. My mum said I was always a comfort eater, but I remember I sort of got involved in diet culture about the age of 5 or 6.
Wow.
Had to fit into some mortifying, you know, page boy outfit, and so I needed to lose some weight, and was bribed, I think, with a digital watch, which I managed to get, but I guess unwittingly, I now know that maybe that started something that I was just really unconsciously, some unhelpful ideas, and weight went up, weight went down. I was bullied quite badly for my weight. And I then got very into sports and rowing, and I lost an enormous amount of weight and intentionally tried to do so in really unhelpful ways. And it was only when I got into treatment and got some help that actually people were like, God, yeah, you got really underweight. You weren't very well then. no one said it at the time. I was like, oh, you're really motivated. You're looking after yourself. And in fact, when I got help to deal with my addictions predominantly, I was probably at my biggest, and you know, binge eating and other unhelpful behaviors were part of my journey, but it was all wrapped up with unhelpful use of substances and stuff like that. So it was a mess. It was a real mess. And then it was in treatment that there's some, I was in secondary treatment. They said, well, maybe there's something else going on here. And so I went into an eating disorder group, and I thought this is going to be a waste of time, and related to pretty much everything that anyone said, and from then was like, oh Christ, maybe this is something. I started attending support groups, getting support from a dietitian. I'm really trying to change my relationship, obviously with food, but body shape and my relationship with exercise, the clarity of not being on substances. My relationship with exercise got really unhealthy. So it's all a bit of a mess. And it was probably the first thing that I used, and it was the last thing probably to go in the end. But yeah, like I said, for years, I would never have classified it as an eating disorder, because I didn't think that was a thing, really. I didn't know what I didn't know. It was getting clean and sober. It was getting into treatment. But I found it really hard, because you know, I was in the minority as a man talking about this stuff. The eating disorder groups I was in, it was predominantly all women, some of them quite young. But you know, once I got over that sort of bias that I had, I related so much of what was being said. And thank goodness that actually I worked that out, because we might not be having this conversation. I might not be doing this if I hadn't.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. And I feel like so many people will be able to resonate with what you're saying, particularly I think those almost normalized behaviors of, you know, being a young man, engaging in a sport, losing weight, being glorified and congratulated for that. I don't think that that's necessarily something that people would see as an issue because of the society that we live in. I wanted to ask you, from the perspective of then when you were going through recovery, how did you shift that bias to be like, oh wait, an eating disorder isn't a female only issue?
That's a really good question. I guess perseverance. I was in treatment for quite a long time, in varying stages. So I was supported quite a lot. I mean, it took a while to really reconcile this kind of stuff. That, A, was it really an eating disorder, or am I just moaning about something? You know, I got quite big, like I said, before I got clean and sober, the biggest I'd ever been. I wasn't well on many levels. And I guess the really mean part of me, I was just like, well, you're just fat. That's a word I don't like to use anymore, but I was pretty horrible to myself. But after time, good support from therapists and peers, what you've done in the past, that's not particularly normal. I got thin and I got fit when I was younger. I didn't do it in a healthy way. I was restricting really heavily, exercising massively. If I'd go out and eat a big meal, I'd compensate in some way, exercise or you know, other ways. So it sort of, the denial took a while to shatter. There was the odd man or young man, someone who's like fresh out of treatment. I'd hear their stories, but I was relating, you know, people, women, young and old, sharing about, you know, putting food in the bin so they stop their binge, but taking it out of the bin, or trying to spoil food, all of this stuff, hiding food, doing this, doing that. And I'm like, I've done all of that. And then my thinking whilst sober, going through treatment, was insane. You know, I was in a bigger body, but I was thinking, you know, in a very sort of restrictive mindset. And being really horrible about the way I looked, and just this constant reflection, what you're doing is not normal. You know, eventually I was able to see that there's something not right, and it wasn't just a question, we'll just stop it. You know what I mean? I found that very difficult. It took a while to sort of get over the hurdle and feel like I could really open up about it. Outside of the group, for example, outside of treatment, I mean, talking to people about it, like that part of it, that was hard, even with my closest to the people I trust the most. Mm. I remember my aunt and uncle were really amazing in my early recovery and supported me massively. Yeah, they're of a generation. Yeah, I'm in my 40s now. And so my uncle was like, how's that diet thing you're going on? And it wasn't a diet, it was a meal plan, you know, prescribed by a dietitian.
I suppose in a way it's a diet. It's not just, it's just not the diet that we think about when most people say diet.
Yeah. And so it's just like, you know, it's easy. I'm just not going to, I'll talk about it. I've got the people I have to talk about it with. I'll just, yeah.
Yeah. And do you think, where did those difficulties come from to talk about it? Was it nobody at the time kind of understood what an eating disorder was? Do you think it was because of the stigmas about gender, or where did that come
from? I think a number of those things. It was easy to talk about being a recovering addict. I managed to get over that really, but it was obvious. That's why I went to treatment.
But was that easier, sorry?
Yeah, that was easier. I mean, it took a bit of time, but like, I was a complete mess. Life was falling down around me, and there was a lot of chaos or wreckage. So it was sort of obvious there's a problem. And I think a lot of people thought he's gained a lot of weight because he drinks a lot and da-da-da, and thought that would all change. But actually what changed my in a really unhealthy way, getting clean, like my first therapist in the first treatment setting I was in, thought I was just highly motivated, which I sort of was, but it was beyond that. It was punishing. And it felt quite unstoppable. And that, I guess, had been there in many different manifestations. But when you're sort of quite numb or sedated because of other things, wasn't really aware of it. It was all rooted, and I didn't really like me. So talk about the addiction. It became a bit easier because it was more obvious, and that's people knew why I'd gone to treatment. Talking about the eating stuff was, I felt like I was going to be judged. I felt like people wouldn't understand. I was judging myself for a lot of it. It took a long time. So I'm very fortunate. I was in sort of a treatment environment for about a year in total. So I had a lot of support. I was still getting a lot of support around eating behaviors and stuff beyond that. And which I needed, you know, and now I talk about it. I mean, you know, it is what it is. It's a real thing. And eating disorders are very dangerous things. And they, especially in men, they're hugely underreported. But generally, you know, there's just not enough support through the NHS or privately. I think there's just not enough. But I think it's important for me to talk about it now. But it did take a while.
I hope it's okay to ask this question, but I've never spoken to somebody before that's been through addiction recovery as well as eating disorder recovery. And I've had my own thoughts about it, but I guess purely from your perspective, were there any similarities between the two recoveries that you recognised?
Yeah, I think there will be different people who have very differing opinions mm-hmm. on that. I think there is, of course, crossover, but like, addictions aren't eating disorders aren't addictions. But I think, and with the training I now have, but in terms of approach, I think there are similar things that can be done to support it. And I don't personally, and this is just my own lived experience, if I didn't get on top of the eating disorder, I don't think I'd have sobriety. Because ultimately, that stuff, I find that actually, it turns out I find the eating stuff, I found all that really painful. And like, it really was really keyed in with my sense of self, my self-esteem. What I was left with when I put down the drink and the drugs was the eating disorder, which had more space, but it's just awful self-loathing that I guess for whatever reason had been around a really long time, and it really fed the disorder, really fed it. I mean, it's what fed it, you know, it's what definitely fed it in the early, especially when I was a teenager, you know, I was responding to sort of being bullied. And as my therapist said at the time, I became the bully. I was my own bully. If you like recovery as a whole, so, you know, there'll be different bits. So there's the addiction part, get on top of that. And then, oh, there's this other thing to actually live well, to thrive, I guess, because we want people to thrive rather than just survive. To thrive, I need to look at it all. So it's like, what's the global recovery? And so that, of course, there are different modalities. There's all getting all technical around it. But actually, I think that's sort of quite holistic, integrative approach. Certain things, if my eating disorder behaviors around that were off, I was off, which led me to be more vulnerable in other areas.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think in terms of if you're somebody that is experiencing or has experience of an addiction and an eating disorder, ultimately you are not the addiction or the eating disorder, you're you. And so if, you know, like you said, if you're engaging in one, it probably makes you vulnerable for the other. And I think for me, it's just always been an interesting thought pattern because I haven't ever had an addiction. However, I would say that my relationship with exercise and a lot of the behaviours I did engage in with my eating disorder did feel as close to an addictive feeling I could ever suggest. There is a lot of similarities there. I would never want to say that it is an addiction, but I think that there's definitely some things that you keep going back for some reason. And a lot of the times that is because it allows you to feel numb, it relieves something, it's a coping strategy, whatever. It feels like there is some crossover.
I think there is work a lot in the addiction field as well. It's the eating disorder field, and there's this sort of phenomenon as cross addiction. And sometimes you'll see people get into addiction recovery and then disordered eating will present. Now, for some people, maybe that's because there's been an underlying eating disorder and then it's got already confused with substance misuse. But for some people, it's just they're in that phase where they're trying to find another coping strategy, and it's something, hopefully it will correct itself. And it's really trying to understand that. And it wasn't that I was just motivated. I was motivated to get well. But like I said, it was there was something very binary about addiction recovery. Do it, don't do it. For me, I'm abstinence-based. With the eating disorder, it's like, well, I've got a brief form of relationship with food, which is so out of whack. I had crazy thinking around it. Just like misinformed idea. I mean, that I believed wholeheartedly, and my dietitian would sit there and say, you're talking absolute rubbish. I was like a grown man. I remember this is quite embarrassing, but I'll share it anyway. I knew that there was definitely an issue when, I was having a tantrum about eating some dried mango. It's like, what the? Because I've been out for lunch. Who goes out for lunch and then eats dried mango? Well, those are people, right? But in my head, I got convinced that's not normal. And it's
that's one of the challenges you have, isn't it, in terms of eating disorder recovery, is the fact that you have to eat. And I'm not minimizing addiction in the slightest, but as you said, you work with the abstinence model. You cut out, you do not have alcohol, you do not have drugs. Yes, you might be in an environment where they're around you, and that can be very, very difficult to navigate. But I think with an eating disorder, you've got to eat, and you've also got to move, whether that is you get back into a sport or you walk to the shop. Ultimately, you have to reform that relationship, and it's unpicking all of those thought patterns that you have about different rules that you've come up with. And I don't think that your mango story is embarrassing in the slightest, because I can think of too many things to even share in my head that you just, when you're in recovery, you're like, wow, I can't believe that was my thought pattern. And something that you mentioned earlier that I thought was really interesting, and I wanted to pick it up because I think it's something that a lot of people don't realize. You were talking about when you were engaging in the binge eating, you had a very restrictive mindset. And I think that that's often something that's really common in people that have binge eating disorder, is always also almost to have that very restrictive mindset. Then they don't eat for a long period of time, and then that's what causes the binging. And I think so many people really struggle to comprehend that or explain that to people, because ultimately, if someone's looking at you and you're not in a body that appears to be restricting, there's so much conflicting information there. So to kind of explain that to your own brain is hard, but then to share with somebody else that that's what's going on, I can imagine, is a very difficult thing to explain.
Well, I was running a workshop the other day for some addiction clients, there were some people who had some disordered eating in the group, and we sort of, the person who was struggling with eating was like, really, but it's all my thoughts, all my choice. It's like, I said, hold on. I said, no one wakes up wanting an eating disorder. No one wakes up wanting to be an addict or have a substance use disorder. That's just, as much as that we do have choices, no one wakes up wanting these conditions. And it's like, you don't just say to the alcoholic, just stop. Because if they could, they would. So you don't say to the binge eater, just stop, right? And it's a similar thing. Someone, alcoholic, binge pattern, they will try and stop, but then they use again. And it's the same thing, So a binge eater will try and stop, but then they set up the binge again. And I guess that's the real kicker, is because it's such a physiological as well as psychological setup, in terms of binge eating. But also, I see it with my clients, especially ones that are binge eaters, often in bigger bodies. They desire, I must lose weight, I must lose weight. And it's like, well, you've got to really work on the relationship with food, how you eat, when you eat. And actually, normally, weight loss is sort of a byproduct of it, I think. But it's, my experience, I went from being big, I just got to not eat, but I over-exercise, into this, actually engaging in those unhealthy behavior. So you've gone from one unhelpful behavior to another unhelpful behavior, thinking all of the professionals who actually have, you know, understand this stuff were talking crap, when in fact, I was the one thinking crap, you know, and it took me a while to realize that.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that as well. I think that is part of the recovery journey, in that's why I'm so grateful to my therapist for never making me feel like an idiot, never making me feel like what I was saying was stupid or how could I possibly believe that, kind of just holding that space for me. Thank you so much for sharing your experience. I wanted to talk a bit more about your lived experience and then how, you know, that might relate to other men. And you mentioned before about the fact of, you know, you having that internalized stigma, and maybe that was something that held you back from getting treatment for an eating disorder. Do you think there are other barriers that men may face in terms of when they're trying to access treatment?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of first barrier is that, sort of stigma. There is such a misinformed stereotype that it's, you know, young women that suffer with these things, and it's all anorexia, right? That sort of, it's just so skewed and so misinformed and so unhelpfully. So I think there's that. But you've got all of these, like, there are people who get annoyed when I say this stuff, but let's be honest, there's a sort of patriarchal idea that, you know, men don't cry, stiff upper lip. I think, you know, in different countries it's slightly different, but, you know, in Britain we're very stiff upper lip. Listen, I went to boarding school from the age of 7. All boys boarding school for 11 years of my life, right? And it's sort of quite hierarchical. You show no emotion. And so you sort of learn to box it away until you cannot keep it hidden any longer, type thing. I thought that I've come from quite a privileged background to be able to have that experience, but it wasn't my most fun times, I've got to be honest. But then I think there is that, just generally, there's that sort of, like, you know, men are men and we don't get this stuff, which is just not true. So I think there's that sort of societal stuff, and of course there's lots of campaigns and there's lots of effort being put into really, you know, encouraging men to open up, and I think that's amazing. But still, I think there's something like 36% of NHS, you know, psychological sort of therapy referrals are male, which is, I mean, that's not many, because there's, you know, still there's a big gap, right? You know, I think in terms of, like, men with eating disorders, it's like 1 in 4 people reported with an eating disorder is a man, but that's reported. And again, I think it's then what type of eating disorder. There's a bit being made more recently in various platforms around sort of muscle dysmorphia, bigorexia, which if you then look at how these men and women get it too, right? You know, but how they engage with the body stuff, the excess, but the eating, the restrictive eating, the massive consequences is having on their living. But it's way more than that. And in fact, my experience, both as someone with lived experience and as a practitioner, I see way more bulimia in men. I see more binge eating sort of men, anorexia in men. You know, but again, it's having the courage to say, hey, I'm struggling here. I think there's something not quite right. And something that someone said to me the other day, which is true, I think, you know, my experience in terms of eating disorder practitioners, me as a man is in the minority, I think, you know. I've been to conferences both here and in the US where, well, it's not a lot of men. I mean, there are men, right? There are a lot, but comparatively, there's this much, much smaller pool of male practitioners. I think for some men, that could definitely be a barrier. This is more, I guess, in my mind, I can see that some men will feel more comfortable sharing this stuff with a man. Yeah.
That's what I was just going to say, is that I think that's actually a really interesting point. And I think that doing research on that would be quite interesting to explore it, in that I think people will all vary within that, because some men may feel more comfortable sharing what they're going through with another man because they may relate, they may resonate, you know, it's man to man. Whereas I feel some other men may actually find that they feel more comfortable speaking to a woman because of that stoic nature of what it means to be a man. You know, I have to be tough, I have to what have you. And so to then have that comparison in that therapy setting might be something that deters people from sharing. But I think what you mentioned about muscle dysmorphia is also a really good point, because for one, you know, I think that the characteristics of muscle dysmorphia are massively normalized. Well, not necessarily normalized, but they're glamorized. You know, if you're somebody who spends relentless hours in the gym, is very restrictive in the way that they eat, and that's seen as, you know, you're very routine, you're very regimented, you're very dedicated, you're very strong because you're in the gym, you're building muscle. All of these characteristics historically are what we would associate with being a successful man. And so you get all that kind of positive reinforcement of those behaviors. Also within the gym, you know, that builds a sense of community because there's other people doing similar things to you. And I think that's why I worry so much about muscle dysmorphia, because it can very much become kind of okay, you know, all your friends are in the gym, so that's fine. No, oh, I'm going to prioritize going to the gym rather than the social activity because it doesn't really matter because I'm going to see my mates there anyway. And I know for me, you know, my experience with excessive exercise, that was very much the kind of headspace that I got into, was what does it matter because I'm having my social activity at the gym, when actually you go to the gym, you don't speak to anyone because you're so focused on what you're doing and you can't possibly have a break because that will ruin everything for you. But equally, as you said, I think it's so important we don't go down this narrative that muscle dysmorphia is the male eating disorder, because it's just going to have the same example as saying that women, you know, anorexia is the only eating disorder and it affects women. Because if muscle dysmorphia becomes the new eating disorder for men, quote unquote, then what about the men that are struggling with anorexia? Or as you said, the men that are struggling with bulimia or binge eating disorder, they're lost in the void again. So my personal opinion of all of it is, you know, as much as people want to and feel comfortable in their own recovery journey, sharing their stories and speaking up about the things that they've been through, not to normalize it, because, you know, having an eating disorder shouldn't be something that's normal, but also just to let people know that, like, it's okay if they are suffering to talk about it. Because I don't want to say it's okay to be suffering, because it absolutely isn't. And I equally don't kind of like this rhetoric of when we say, like, oh, you've had the strength to share your story, because I understand absolutely it is a very courageous thing to share something, but I want it to be, I don't want someone to feel like they have to be in a strong position to share it. It's vulnerable and it's okay to share. And you're not kind of, when I say it out loud, I sound really horrible. Like, it's not super brave or super courageous, because you're sharing your story. And that's something that I want everybody to have access to, rather than thinking they have to sort of put themselves on a pedestal in order to be ready to share.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you're right, it is courageous. Just the asking for help piece. But I think it's that sort of slogan, it's okay to not be okay. I wish there was a solution to get men to be more open. You know, but it's a slow burner, because there's that sort of, maybe it falls into like culture wars. You've got the sort of manosphere and stuff like that, where you don't go into certain male communities, show weakness, right? And so, which an eating disorder would no doubt be judged as one. And there are certain communities, and you see it's all over the internet and socials. You know, I think there's some really unhelpful advice given about, you know, body shape, body composition, diet and all that. Now, some people, especially if they are a celebrity or whatever, you know, they've probably got lots of good people monitoring them and looking after them. Mm-hmm. Most people don't have that, and so they can take it too far. It can start out as well-intentioned and then become a problem. You know, it's like bulimia, right? People don't wake up. And they're not born wanting to purge, right? But it can become a very functional response to a problem. And then all of a sudden, shit, I can't stop. People who are sort of listening to some of what's being said online, taking it sort of like so literally, it can be really dangerous, actually, you know. And I think, again, with the muscle dysmorphia, it's just not, people don't even want to recognize that there might be a problem. But if, listen, I don't know much about the bodybuilding world, right? But, you know, if you're cutting out all sorts of foods, you're in the gym all the time, you're utilizing maybe, you know, drugs to enhance physique, all this stuff. I mean, that just doesn't seem, that's not healthy, right? There's something potentially problematic in that.
I think within the bodybuilding world, I think that, so I have a friend who's just done a competition. She's currently in her like a bodybuilding season. And when she first told me she was going to do it, I was like, don't know if I can cope with that. Don't know if I can be around you with that. And actually watching her go through the process has been really, really interesting, because she wanted to see what her body could achieve. And she's done that. And she's won competitions. She's the first competition, like first season. She's done absolutely amazingly. But throughout the whole process, she's kept in check very well with her mental health and, you know, her relationship with food and things like that. And a part of me does think, okay, well, it's probably after you've done the season that I'm more concerned about, because currently you're looking, quote unquote, your best. So mm-hmm. you're probably feeling great right now. But she has been really responsible in terms of keeping in check with herself and keeping herself physically well, working with dietitians, working with a fitness coach. And so part of me does think, I don't think that we need to be so black and white about things. I think that, yep. you know, people can do things like bodybuilding and also have a healthy relationship with their food and body. It's very similar to when you're in recovery. A lot of people have asked me, well, you know, you're really into CrossFit. Is that healthy for you? Because you've had an eating disorder. You've only just started, you know, you've only just been in recovery. And I think that you yourself personally know what your intentions are. And ultimately, I think from recovery, something I've developed is honesty and trust with myself and yep. knowing that, okay, yeah, the workout that I did yesterday definitely was fueled by compulsion. It was definitely fueled by fear of gaining weight. How can I now reflect on that to make sure that going forwards, I'm not using exercise as a crutch? And so that for me is kind of where I sit on it, in that for some people, if I said to you, James, I'm going to go and do a bodybuilding competition, full permission for you to say, absolutely not, Hannah. That is not something that you can engage in, because I know that for me, that would be really unhealthy. But that doesn't necessarily mean it is for everybody, but with a caveat of, I do imagine my friend is very much an anomaly, and most people that are doing it are probably doing it in a very unhealthy way that is kind of, you know, there's a lot of disordered behaviours going on there, and they probably don't have those check-ins like my friend did to make sure that her mental health was staying okay.
I totally agree, and I don't think it is black and white. None of it's black and white, is it? I think not just the sort of bodybuilding community, but also you look at athletes, high performance athletes and stuff, because you look sort of historically, maybe there has been this real encouragement, maybe not explicit, but like, if you sort of do this, you're going to get further up the list type thing.
Yeah.
And then so these really unhelpful behaviors creep in, and then, you know, people get really unwell. But if it's done, I think there's a way of approaching things. I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's about, what's the motivation? What's the intention? And I guess, you know, what I know to be true about eating disorders and addiction, such a key feature is self-deception, mm-hmm. you know, and so such a feature of recovery has got to be honesty, mm-hmm. you know, self-honesty.
Yeah.
And that's the most, like, I wear an Apple Watch now, but still that can, have I done enough freaking mm-hmm. steps today? It's like, oh, well, you haven't got time to do anymore anyway, so what does it matter? But like back in the day when I was yeah. in early recovery and my eating, you know, my behaviours around food were and exercise were challenging, you know, I got banned. My dad says, like, you've got to stop wearing it because, mm-hmm. you know, I couldn't not. I mean, I'd have a really decent week. I'd be sticking to a meal plan. I wasn't allowed to go to the gym because I was punishing. But come Saturday, I'd go and walk 10 hours, 8 hours around London. I was strutting and it was all driven by what's the data saying? So there's all of these little things. And for some people, right, it's totally fine. Keeps them on track in whatever way. But there are some of us who it's, you know, not yeah. useful.
And I think that's the biggest piece, isn't it, is what's right for you won't be right for the next person. But as you said, it's that self-disclosure, that self-honesty. And that's the most important thing in recovery, is finding out what works for you and recognizing that some people may do things that if you did them would send you spiraling, but that's okay because they're not. And, you know, they are, stay in your own lane, as people often
100%.
Say.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like your recovery is your responsibility. Just focus on yours. And I think for eating disorder recovery, it couldn't be truer, because, you know, your prescription for a meal plan is probably going to be different to mine, right? Because I'm a man, you're a woman, we're different people, we have different requirements, all of that stuff, right? And there's sort of a lot of science behind that. But it's easy to get, well, why can't I do that? Why can they do that and I can't? And, you know, one of the challenges working with eating disorders, especially in sort of community group settings, is people, well, why do they get that and I don't? Because, you know, we're all different people. We have different needs. And that's really important because, again, the binary nature of like abstinence-based addiction stuff, it's quite straightforward. Do it, don't do it. With eating disorder, it's abstinence from the unhelpful behaviors. You know, and that's not because there are lots of unhelpful behaviors in many different ways and lots of unhelpful thinking patterns. It's like, I think it's progressive. You've got to work on them progressively. It's, you know, it's too much to ask or it's loads to ask to say, right, tomorrow you can't think in any of the unhelpful ways you used to think. And you can't do any of the sometimes really small but unhelpful things you used to do. Right? It's a lot. Because for most people, you know, we've been using food, you know, or at least our mouths, so already we've been soothed from the moment we're born, you know. So, and then whatever happens in the family system and all of that and unhelpful messaging in the world, society around food and what's healthy, what's unhealthy, what looks good, what in a, I mean, it's a minefield for people like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when one of my friends went sober a couple of years ago and she used an app to track the days that she'd been sober and found that really motivational because, you know, she'd look at it and be like, hey, I've done 2 days, like, you know, I can do a third day. And as the number crept up, that meant that she wanted to stick at it more. And she said, oh, you know, they've got an eating sort of feature on there and you should track yours. And I was like, but it doesn't work the same way. Like, you know, if I have a restrictive thought, that basically means that day it's not counted. And so, you know, I think that what we were saying before about how similar in some respect recovery can be, I think there are those big differences as well. But I honestly, James, I could carry on talking to you for several hours, but I am aware of the time. So thank you so much for your insight. I really, really appreciate it. Where can people go to find out more about you and, you know, the services that you offer?
Well, the best place is the Wellbeing and Recovery Collective website. And there's lots of different information on there about all of theirs. There's one-on-one therapy, there's group therapy, there's programs, structured recovery programs. So there's lots of different online, all online offerings, which is important for me. Online is important because I want recovery resources to be accessible. But so yeah, all at the website.
Yeah, amazing. And I'll put the website in the show notes as well so that people have access to that. But thank you so much. It's honestly been such a pleasure to chat to you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.